morning. Thank you for joining us on a Tuesday morning. It's Evan Bray, and we've got fairly nice weather, although there is a possibility of showers in parts of the province. The week ahead and the long weekend, a mixed bag, depending on where you are in the province, a chance of a fair bit of rain, actually, between now and then, which would be welcomed by most parts of the province. But those that are hoping to enjoy a beautiful long weekend, temperature is actually looking cold, maybe a little bit wet. Not great timing for those that are hoping to enjoy a long weekend of maybe it's going to be your first camping excursion or whatever they may be. Hey, speaking of which, I saw someone on the text line talking up the Nutrien Playland on Spadina Crescent, Kinsman Park. That just opened up here just this week in the city of Saskatoon. This is supposed to be incredible. It's $3.25, I think, for a ticket. You can buy a play pack of tickets, and then you can ride the Canpotex train. There's a Ferris wheel. There's a carousel, and then a whole bunch of other what I would consider to be normal playground features. They've got a water spray park, sand play, climbing area. It's pretty cool. Check it out. The Nutrien Playland at Kinsman Park. A couple of people raving about that on the text line. Well, this conversation is interesting. And when it was first brought up to me, the notion of palliative care is something that in my mind is end-of-life care. Palliative care, my understanding of it is if someone is, for example, sick with cancer and they are at the point where there are no other treatment options available and they're wanting to just keep them as comfortable as they can for the last, whether it's weeks or days of their life, they go into palliative care. The conversation I had with a professional in healthcare was, no. Palliative care is actually much more broad than that. And the back and forth that we had after that, to me, was too good not to turn into a conversation on the show, which is what I'm looking to do this morning. I'm happy to have Dr. James McMillan join us this morning from his office in Saskatoon. Dr. McMillan is a palliative medicine consultant and physician lead for SHA Palliative Care Provincial Clinical Network. By the way, last week was National Palliative Care Week in Canada. Dr. McMillan, thanks so much for joining the show.
Thanks so much. Happy to be part of it.
So how I open this segment up, am I right that there is a common misconception on the definition of what palliative care is?
Yes, certainly. You're not the only one who sometimes view palliative care as exclusively end-of-life care. Now, we certainly do support patients at end-of-life when they're in their final days to short weeks of life, but that is only one portion of the spectrum of what palliative care offers. One metaphor that I often use that sometimes people find helpful is the idea of a light switch. There are two types of light switch, the simple on-off switch and the dimmer switch. And historically, palliative care was often understood as more of a on-off switch. So people have been receiving treatment, perhaps for a cancer. They've failed first line, perhaps second line, third line chemotherapy, and then finally, there is nothing further that can be offered for the patient, and the old model was that's when you flip the switch for palliative care, when nothing further can be offered to modify the disease, so ask palliative care to come in for the final days to short weeks of life. But the literature and experience suggests that a much better model is more the dimmer switch model, where palliative care is involved early, and its involvement might be minimal, a little bit more in the background in the initial stages. It might fluctuate over time, fading in and out depending on a person's symptom needs or particular concerns. But as disease-modifying treatments hoping to control or cure the disease are diminishing, palliative care involvement gradually increases over time. And that model has proven to be more effective and more helpful both for patients and loved ones.
So I'm wondering, Dr. McMillan, can you give us some examples of situations where it might be used not necessarily in those last couple of weeks end-of-life care, but throughout the process as you've just laid out?
Yeah, absolutely. So we generally recommend that a palliative approach to care be integrated early in any serious life-limiting illness. So certainly cancers that are not curable or even advanced non-cancerous conditions, certain neurological things like Parkinson's disease, dementia, ALS, or other end organ diseases, advanced lung disease like COPD or emphysema. So whenever there is a serious life-limiting illness, having this palliative approach to care integrated early can be helpful. Palliative care, you know, really seeks to treat the whole person, absolutely physically, but also kind of psychosocially, supporting them in their holistic approach to care. And so this will involve sometimes symptom management. So even while people are undergoing chemotherapy or other disease-modifying treatment, we're helping with pain control or control of other distressing symptoms like nausea, shortness of breath. So physical things, but then also kind of more broadly, building rapport and establishing relationships with patients and their loved ones, finding out kind of what their priorities and their wishes are, helping them navigate treatment decisions, try to interpret, you know, based on what their unique wishes and priorities are, what makes most sense. So doing some advanced care planning, goals of care conversations, also getting them connected with supports. So perhaps things like palliative drug coverage, where they can have medications covered earlier in their illness. Sometimes linking up with other palliative resources like palliative home care or other supports that we have in the community.
Right. Dr. James McMillan is my guest, palliative medicine consultant and physician lead for the Saskatchewan Health Authority Palliative Care Provincial Clinical Network. Is it true that even amongst healthcare providers, there's some misunderstandings of how palliative care could be used through the continuum of care for a patient?
Yeah, I think that there is. Now, fortunately, shifting to more this newer model of early integration of palliative care, it is becoming more widely accepted and integrated, but I think there is still a residue of that old model where palliative care is exclusively end-of-life care. But we're grateful that we've been able to have even more educational opportunities further upstream, so in the College of Medicine and nursing and so forth, to integrate this new model.
Right. I mean, by definition, palliative is about relieving symptoms without necessarily focusing on the cause of the condition. You're saying it is possible through a person's journey that both can be done.
That's right. Yeah. And actually, the evidence suggests that it's in the patient's best interest if both can be done early. So there is actually some very interesting research that's been done, particularly looking in the context of patients who have advanced cancers. And when they compared certain patient group where they just had sort of standard oncological care and followed them compared to a different patient population where they had both the standard cancer care as well as early integration of palliative care, those people who had the earlier integration actually lived longer and had improved quality of life, both in physical scope as well as kind of psychosocial scope. And then their loved ones, their family, friends, other caregivers tended to have better outcomes themselves when palliative care was involved early.
Is this really just an opportunity, and you and I are doing it today by talking on the show about this, but an opportunity just for conversations? Because I think if I have a family member who's dealing with cancer diagnosis, for example, the mention of palliative care to me signals something that maybe after this conversation is not completely accurate. And I would be very open to having that conversation if it means a level of comfort and perhaps an extension of time that you might have with your loved one.
Yeah, certainly. And you're not alone. I can't tell you how many times I go into a patient room and introduce myself as a member of the palliative care team. And initially, you can see kind of eyes widen and back stiffen and some nervousness because a lot of people associate that word palliative with we've given up hope and there's nothing else that can be done, as compared to more this holistic, broader scope of palliative care, which can really help both patients who are undergoing active treatment, as well as those who are approaching end of life and improve outcomes for them and their loved ones.
This is a fascinating conversation, Doc. How would you advise people to advocate for this? Is there a need for patients to better understand and advocate for this with their healthcare professionals?
Yeah, so I think certainly, you know, if you are someone or you have a loved one who is facing a serious life-limiting illness, just asking the question, I've understood that palliative care can be integrated early. What might that look like? Are there some resources that you can link me up with? That can be helpful. There's lots of great information, even if you just look at the SHA webpage, SHA Palliative Care, that introduces some of these topics and provides helpful resources, both for patients and for family members.
This is such an important conversation, and I am appreciative. I know how busy you are, but I appreciate you giving us some time this morning. Dr. McMillan, thank you so much.
I'm very happy to. Thanks.
Dr. James McMillan and this conversation on palliative care. I am happy that we're able to turn the corner and broaden what is truly the definition of palliative care. It is literally pain relief, symptom management, basic dignity to help understand what the broad scope of palliative care is. You can't access the support if no one is offering it, and people need to learn that this is a support that they have, a way of providing comfort and dignity well before those final days. You heard the doctor talk about cancer, yes, but ALS, Parkinson's, heart failure. Palliative care can improve outcomes in many different ways. It lowers stress on family members, helps family cope, and gives the patient a better quality of life as well. So this is really about changing the narrative and adjusting the dial on how we view palliative care. Me included, assumed always that it was simply end-of-life care to make a patient comfortable, when really it can start much earlier and should start much earlier in the journey. And as you said, Dr. McMillan mentioned, you can go on the SHA webpage to find out more information on the palliative care program. You're listening to 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. Thanks again to Dr. James McMillan with the SHA to talk about the importance of palliative care in our health system and how it is much broader than the definition that I think most of us perceived when we think about palliative care. It tends to be a focus on end-of-life care. It often can be when someone is suffering from a disease or an illness that will be life-limiting, but it can start much earlier in the process and greatly enhances quality of life. In some cases, extends life expectancy, it reduces stress on family. There's a whole bunch of positive benefits. And a number of people have been texting in, kind of adding to that conversation. Almost all are talking about the incredible care you get when you work with doctors and nurses that are trained in the palliative section of our health care in this province. Carol with a text here that says, one portion of palliative care that should be explored is the care of a patient close to home in rural areas. My husband was considered palliative, and rather than drive to Saskatoon an hour away, the nursing home accepted him closer to our home. There was still a cost to have her husband in the nursing home, but Carol said, of course, there's a benefit to not having to make that long drive when it comes to palliative care. So thanks to everyone willing to share stories. A very personal conversation, but appreciate it. And it was great. Dr. McMillan was outstanding to help us understand how that plays out. So as we watch the appointments this morning, they're on to the Secretary of State appointments right now at Rideau Hall. So these are 10 positions that Mark Carney is bringing back to his government. Not all governments have had the actual Secretary of State appointments. They're given specific portfolios to support a member of cabinet. Buckley Belanger, who is the Desnethi Missinippi Churchill River MP for Saskatchewan, has been appointed rural development. So we do have a seat at the table, if you will. It's like a junior cabinet minister position is essentially another way to describe it. There was a number of people weighing in on the cabinet appointments this morning, and it made me think about when we had the conversation with Mr. Derek Burney last week. Derek, of course, you remember, former chief of staff for Prime Minister of Canada. He worked as basically a consultant for a couple of conservative leaders, both Harper and Mulroney. He was the Canadian ambassador to the U.S. And I asked him what he expected to see in Mark Carney's cabinet.
Well, there's got to be change. The same gang that led us down the road in the last 10 years shouldn't be given the keys to the kingdom yet again. So I'm hoping, desperately hoping, there was a rumor that he was going to bring some private sector people in. That would be terrific. I mean, this this government needs a real shake in terms of policy going forward. And that's a more crucial issue, I would say, Evan, than relations with the United States. Because if we don't get our act together better at home, we won't be able to compete with the United States. And that's a problem right today. We also won't be able to attract other trade partners in a positive way because we haven't got our act together with regulations and tax policy and you name it. I mean, the last 10 years have cost Canadians a lot in terms of their standard of living. Michael Ignatieff said as much on CNN. He said it was an existential threat to Canada. He's a former Liberal leader. So the priority for the Prime Minister, in my view, has to be fixing the economy at home. The tax rules, the regulations, the permits for projects, all of those things that are essential to make us more competitive vis-a-vis the United States, which always has to be a priority for Canada. And as I said, for us to be able to attract other trade partners.
That was Derek Burney joining us on the show last week. There was a recent survey that was done of Canadians that talked about what they feel the priority of this newly elected Liberal government should be. You won't be shocked to know Western Canadians and younger respondents rank affordability as the number one priority. Affordability in the prairies ranked easily number one, well ahead of U.S. relations. Eastern Canada has stronger sights set on U.S. relations. Affordability is number two for Eastern Canadians. But the breakdown by age is an interesting one to me. Those aged 18 to 34 rank affordability as the most important priority. Those 55 and over, and this is across Canada, even in Western Canada, tend to view the United States as more of a threat. That number is much stronger in the East than it is in the West, but nonetheless, the survey shows that there is some consistency there as well. Just finishing up the cabinet swearing in, we've hashed it out a little bit this morning. Full lists are available online. There are some returning ministers who, and some of which who have been on our show before. Chrystia Freeland we've had on the show, Melanie Joly, Gary Anand de Sangaré. All of those ministers have retained positions in cabinet, although they have been shifted around a little bit. No doubt we'll talk more about this as the week wears on, and I appreciate everyone that's been weighing in on the text line this morning. All right, it's our weekly check-in, monthly check-in with the police chief in Saskatoon. Cam McBride joins me in studio next. Talk about community safety in the city of Saskatoon when we come back. You're listening to 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.